Antichrist is a guy who sells himself completely out to Satan to do his bidding. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, thanks very much for joining me. This is Dr. Fred. You are listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do just that. We're continuing on in a series we began a while ago about Rome Rising, and Rome Rising is based on my book of the same name, which is available through Amazon.com, and it details how the fourth beast, which we know from Scripture is Rome, the Roman Empire, how the fourth beast goes through several stages since its inception and its final form, which will be standing when Jesus physically returns. Last time we talked about, specifically, we were talking about Daniel 7 and 8. We also threw in there 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 through 12. And that was Paul warning the Thessalonian believers and us in turn that there was going to come a day when the mystery of lawlessness that was already at work in his day would come to fruition after he who now restrains is taken out of the way or steps aside. And then the lawless one, all of this mystery of lawlessness is pointing to that final lawless individual who will be revealed. And this is the same person, Paul tells us, that will be eventually destroyed with the breath of Jesus' mouth. Just a word when he returns. And he will bring an end to that lawless individual simply by the appearance of his return. And verse 9 specifically states, that is the one whose coming is in accord with the activity of Satan, with all power and signs and false wonders, and with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish because they did not receive the love of truth so as to be saved. This last verse that I just read, verse 10 of 2 Thessalonians 2, is very reminiscent of Romans chapter 1. It's the same problem. People refuse the truth. Today, most people go by emotional virtue, if you can call it that. It stems from an overindulgent society that reeks of political correctness. Political correctness is simply another phrase, another term for cultural Marxism, but cultural Marxism doesn't sound that great. It sounds, well, Marxism, it sounds like it's communist, and it is, because they are trying to change the way society basically works, the truth of society. They want it to not be based on any absolutes, and instead they want it to be based on emotions. And that's where we've come to in society today. We see people viscerally charged with emotion. They react viscerally to situations and circumstances, regardless of any facts. People often make decisions today and come to conclusions based on how they feel. The situation in Ferguson is a perfect example of this, where we have individuals within the black community, and certainly some whites as well, agreeing that Mike Brown did not deserve to die. He had done nothing wrong. He was simply hunted, targeted, and killed by a white police officer. Well, I'm not going to pronounce guilt or innocence here. That's not my job. But the point is, the facts are not in. They're still coming in. And we see people up in arms over a situation like this because of the way they feel about it. It hits them in their emotional center, and that is how they react. So what we're talking about here is the same kind of thing. People tend to react to truth, even if it came out, let's say that Michael Brown, let's say there was a video showing that Michael Brown had been wrestling with the officer. He had punched him, scratched him in the face, and then eventually, after being told to halt and freeze, let's say he turned around and tried to ambush the officer by bum rushing him, et cetera, et cetera. Even if we had a video stating that same thing, we would still get people who would say, well, he still didn't deserve to die. You know, the officer could have done something different. The situation is that, you know, people in those situations, it's easy to be an armchair quarterback, but people in those situations simply react. It's a fight or flight situation. So, unfortunately, we have people in this world who react from an emotional point of view, regardless what the facts are. And these two verses, 9 and 10 that I just read, specifically point out the Antichrist and how he will rise to power on earth, because first of all, he's completely sold out to Satan and his schemes. And secondly, people react emotionally. Think of the way Adolf Hitler rose to power in such a very short time. People reacted to him emotionally, viscerally. They were drawn to him like steel to a magnet. They had no time to think or didn't really care what their brain was saying to them. But getting back to the Antichrist, the sin that caused Satan to fall was pride in thinking that he was equal to God. Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28. Now, the egoism or narcissistic attitude overcame Satan, Lucifer, before his fall, driving him to contemplate, to actually contemplate that God wasn't so great and that he, Satan, could be just like God. Never mind that Satan, Lucifer, was a created being by this very God whom he thought he would emulate and eventually equal. You know, the idea, think about it, that a created being could not only think like this, but come to believe it, seems totally absurd to us. Yet this is the depths that people and beings like Satan can fall to when they give in to their narcissism, when they begin to believe what their emotions tell them. They're so drawn to themselves that they see little else. They're often very intelligent, if not brilliant people, and they tend to attract people to themselves. People like this often tend to think that they can do anything, and more often than not, a lot of these people unfortunately become psychopaths. They simply use people to obtain what they want, but they have no real feeling or compassion for anyone. If anything, they ridicule them in their minds. They hate them. They make the best con artists in the world because they are able to understand what people need to what? Feel good about themselves. So they fill that need. They make people feel as though they are something special. And I believe that that's why Paul tells us that Satan comes to deceive us and is able to do so because of his ability to transform himself into an angel of light, 2 Corinthians 11:14. Now, we may not realize this is what he's doing, but there's something in our heart of hearts that wants to throw up a red flag, and too often we tend to ignore it. Why? Because of our feelings, because of how it makes us feel. A person who loves himself so much is usually a master manipulator. Most people are blind to this and they fail to understand what's going on beneath the surface in that individual or even in themselves when that con artist comes to con them. This is why people like Ted Bundy can go for years without getting caught for their crimes. When they are caught, people have such a difficult time accepting the fact that these people are killers, cold-blooded rapists, killers. And they're essentially psychopaths who have absolutely no feeling for anyone else. People are put here for them to use, abuse, and throw away. Those individuals are at the center of their world, and everyone else is but a servant without those people even realizing it. This is Satan times 1,000, maybe times 10,000, maybe times a million, I have no idea. But whatever it is, he will imbue his spiritual son, Antichrist, with all of his own power, and he will even give him his throne in order to attempt to achieve what he's always desired, which is to be like the Most high. He'll go to the man who turns out to be the Antichrist, and he will offer him the same deal that he offered Jesus, as recorded in Matthew 4, when Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. There, Satan tempted Jesus, among other things, to worship him as God. And in return, he would give him all the kingdoms of the world. Wow. Jesus, as we know, responded with a firm no. But the Antichrist is not going to do that. He will gladly agree to the exchange because it's going to give him what he desires more than anything. It will provide him, Antichrist, with the power to do miracles and to be worshipped. And when people worship him, they're ultimately worshiping Satan. Now, in essence, Satan himself is going to be the one who's going to be worshiped. And in that sense, he will actually see part of his promise to become like the Most High achieved, at least on a human level. But like everything that Satan does, it's not going to be the same thing. And it will pale in comparison to actually being God. Satan, a finite creature. A finite created being believes he can become an infinite uncreated being. That's what narcissism will do for you. The incongruencies are obvious to us. It lacks logic. But narcissism, to that extent, sees no logic, has no problem that it doesn't make sense. Satan's going to take this smaller horn, and remember last time we talked about the fact that the fourth beast has 10 horns in Daniel 7. And remember, those original 10 horns are there, and then one smaller horn rises up among them, is not one of them, but rises up among them, and he actually becomes then the 11th. He slays three, uproots three. And then there are seven of the original horns left with him. He is now the 8th. So he was the 11th. He is now the 8th. And just a reminder, these are the same as the 10 toes in Daniel 2. Satan is going to take this smaller horn, as I said, who is at first the 11th, but after three of the 10 horns mysteriously die, he's going to become the 8th. Satan will use this smaller horn for his own purposes, to make himself great. Satan will have 7 years to make it happen, to fulfill his promises in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28. But in the end, Paul tells us, as does Daniel, and in Revelation we get the same story, that Jesus will return and take charge by killing the Antichrist with but a word or the breath from his mouth. So all this work that Satan will have gone through to enthrone Antichrist, to empower him beyond Antichrist's wildest dreams, to give him supernatural abilities, to give him the entire world to rule, all that work, and when Jesus returns, it will be gone in a flash, less than a flash, a millisecond. Whatever it takes. Now, from here, we're going to move on to Revelation 13. And we're going to talk about some things that happened there. We're going to see the dragon. The Bible describes him literally as a dragon. But I think that in that sense, what's the meaning? Is Satan an actual dragon? Or does he just act like a dragon? Does he speak like a dragon? Well, I think we're seeing symbolism here in another portion of Scripture. We talk about the fact, or it talks about the fact, that this dragon, he speaks like a dragon. He is ferocious. And that's what we're going to see. Rising up out of the sea, standing on the shore near the sea as the beast is rising out of the sea. So here's Satan. He comes to the shore of the sea to watch this fourth beast once again reveal itself. Well, that's our show for today. Join us next time as we get more into Revelation 13. And I really appreciate you joining me. Until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.